you've been promoted.
Wow. How things go at court today, huh, Michael?
It's a long habit.
Naomi, is the tape on?
It is.
Okay, I'm going to call the February 23rd, 2021 regular meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we'll begin. Councilmember Bryles, please lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Naomi, please call the roll.
Mayor Holzklaw.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Vanell.
Here.
Councilmember Bond.
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari.
Here.
Councilmember Steckler.
Here.
Councilmember Bryles.
Here.
Councilmember Morgan.
Here indeed.
Thank you, Naomi. We'll move into audience communication. Would anyone like to speak to the council tonight? Please raise your little yellow hand, preferably, or otherwise give me an indication you want to speak. Will, Barbara? Okay, hearing none, we'll move on. There'll be another opportunity, as always, at the end of the meeting. Move on to the presentations. Item C, in honor of Black History Month, I have a proclamation to read on behalf of the city. Bear with me a minute. Whereas the city of Mill Creek takes pride in recognizing February 2021 as Black History Month, a time dedicated to remembering and celebrating Black culture, history, contributions, and sacrifices made to create a brighter future for all Americans. And whereas Black History Month celebrates the achievements of African Americans who have been instrumental in shaping the character, culture, and economic life of our state and nation. And whereas Dr. Carter G. Woodson, founder of the Association for the Study of African American Life and History, first launched Negro History Week in 1926 and is widely regarded as the father of Black history. And whereas in 1976, the informal expansion of Negro History Week to Black History Month was officially recognized by the United States government. And whereas the 2019 theme, Black Migrations, focuses specifically on the movement of people of African heritage to new destinations and social realities in the 20th century, it does not forget the millions of early Africans who were forcibly taken to the Americas. And whereas Black History Month is an occasion to rediscover the enduring stories of African Americans and the gifts of freedom, purpose, and opportunity they have bestowed on future generations, it is also a time to commemorate the countless contributions of African Americans, many of whom lived through and surmounted the scourge of segregation, racial prejudice, and discrimination to enrich every fiber of American life. Their examples of heroism, patriotism, and enterprise have given people of all backgrounds confidence, courage, and faith to pursue their own dreams. And whereas Black History Month is a time to recognize and honor the many people, events, and significant contributions of Black and African Americans to our community, nation, and world. Now, therefore, I, Brian Holtzclaw, the mayor of the city of Mill Creek, on behalf of the city council, do hereby proclaim the month of February 2021 as Black History Month and ask all residents of Mill Creek to join me in commemorating the countless contributions of African Americans to our nation and the world. That was a mouthful. A lot of whereases. Moving on to item D, the update from the health district. Michael, do you want to make an introduction?
Yeah, just very briefly. We're pleased to have Regina Grayblack back, the environmental health director for Sonoma's health district. She will, of course, be speaking on the district's COVID-19 pandemic response, talking about the vaccination plans and planning, as well as other updates from the health district. So Regina, welcome back. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see, can I share my screen?
Yes, you may.
Okay. Good, everybody, we can see that? Good, okay.
Yes.
Thank you. All right. Hello, everyone. Yes, my name is Regina Gray. I am the Environmental Health Director at the Snohomish Health District. I'm very happy to be joining you this evening. I'm going to give you a quick update on what the Health District accomplished in 2020 and what our plans are for 2021. So first, let's start with our non-COVID work. There was a lot of work in 2020 to rebuild and improve critical systems at the health district. Because we closed our front desk due to COVID, we had to ensure that our services were available and accessible online and over the phone. We made some major improvements to our aging IT infrastructure, and we gave our building a desperately needed coat of paint. We've also been working on a new initiative with ClearGov, which will help us provide transparency and accountability on our website for public access. Of course, throughout everything, our normal work continued, things like food safety inspections and annual inspections of schools and pools. These things were hampered but not halted by the pandemic. And on top of those, we had over 1,000 complaints to investigate, everything from businesses operating outside the governor's guidance to failing septic systems and garbage complaints. In Mill Creek specifically, you have 58 food establishments with annual permits that get inspected between 1 and 3 times per year. And we followed up on 15 complaints from citizens in your community. Our food safety team worked really hard in 2020 to provide information and clarity to food establishments. The guidelines were ever changing, COVID restrictions and best practices were hard to gauge, and many restaurants struggled to interpret all of the available information while at the same time operating at limited capacity. So we tried really hard to assist those facilities. Our childcare program consulted with 78 childcare providers, resulting in providers receiving 242 continued education courses. And we provided technical assistance to 33 vaccine providers and tested over 1,000 Mill Creek residents at SHD-run COVID testing sites. During all of this, of course, we were also responding to COVID-19. We do have extensive resources on our website for coronavirus information, testing information, resources for businesses, and of course, we have vaccine appointments on the website as well. The cases in Snohomish County have been largely focused where the population is. That's not really a surprise. This map is called a heat map, where more cases are represented by a darker shade of red. This map actually represents cases, total cases identified from early 2020 through January 23rd of this year. This map is very similar, but it actually shows a current case rate by zip code. The case rate is updated every week based on a 2-week rolling period. The areas in darker blue indicate a higher case rate or essentially more transmission of the virus. Looking ahead, our top priority is ensuring that the healthcare system, including hospitals, long-term care facilities, and others, continue to have what they need in order to treat patients. We're actively working to contain the spread of the disease with contact tracing, outbreak investigations, and of course, right now, distribution of the vaccine. We're working to increase the supply of doses locally, and we're also collaborating with partners to increase access and access information for underserved and at-risk populations. As of February 6th of this year, over 70,000 first doses and nearly 15,000 second doses of the vaccine have been administered in Snohomish County. We're actively working to decrease the time in between when the doses are received in the county to when the doses are administered to patients. We have 93 total providers approved to administer the vaccine, and we have several more expecting approval shortly. Moving into 2021, obviously we're going to be continuing to navigate the pandemic, but we'll be focusing on implementing our strategic plan. This is available on our website if you're interested in kind of diving into it in greater detail as well. We do have a balanced budget in 2021. A majority of our revenue comes from intergovernmental agreements, with most of those being state and federal grants, and also significantly under licenses and permits as well. If all goes expected, we project a slight but continued increase in revenue and expenses over the next 6 years. By 2026, we expect our expenses to slightly outpace our revenues. So therefore, looking ahead for funding, our top priorities are attaining sufficient and sustainable funding for both our COVID work and our daily activities. We anticipate increasing revenue from a couple of different sources. We're looking to lease out currently unused space in our Rucker Building in downtown Everett. And we're also working to establish the new Sound Foundation for Public Health, which will help us gain access to funds that we wouldn't normally be able to utilize. The foundation anticipates filing paperwork early this year for its 501c3 status. New board members have been selected, and we're currently working on finalizing the MOU in between the foundation and the health district. So obviously that was a whirlwind of information in 5 minutes or less, and I've only scratched the surface, but if you're interested in learning more generally about what we do, there's lots of ways to stay in touch. We're active on social media. We also have newsletters, a blog, and as I said, a very comprehensive website right now. And so with that, I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Regina. Are there any questions from the council? I see Benjamin's hand up. Thank you for using your yellow hand. Benjamin, and then Councilmember Bryles, followed by Councilmember Cavalieri.
Yes, my question for you is, where is the nearest vaccination site for residents of Mill Creek?
That is a really good question. I believe Boeing would be your closest one, but what I don't know off the top of my head is whether they're actually open yet. That might still be in the works and in the next couple of days. I can get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. I think the one at Boeing is open. I didn't know if they were the closest one here.
Councilmember Cavalieri and then Councilmember Steckler.
Thank you, Mayor. Hi, Regina. How are you? Thank you for coming here tonight and presenting to us. We appreciate all that you do. I have a couple of questions, if you'll indulge me a little bit. First one is that when you said investigate, what type of investigations in the city or complaints? Can you tell us about that?
Oh, that is a really good question. So most of the time, those kinds of complaints are things like for COVID, it would be things like this restaurant is operating outside of guidelines. It might be operating at greater capacity, for example, or at the beginning, we were getting a lot of complaints about, you know, this pool or this gym is open and they shouldn't be, that sort of thing. That's kind of more on the COVID side. On the non-COVID side, a typical complaint for environmental health is usually a solid waste complaint, like collection of garbage in people's yards, things like that. I don't have the information right at the tip of my fingers to know exactly what Mill Creek had.
Okay, thank you for that though. Next one is are families currently allowed to visit their family members or seniors in these living facilities currently in Snohomish County?
You guys are hitting me with some really good ones. I don't know.
Okay. And lastly, and then I'll hand the baton off to somebody else. You don't happen to have the number of percentage of flu deaths this past year to the prior year?
I don't, although I will say generally that flu has been down this past year, and it's largely due to the measures that folks have taken to avoid COVID-19. So if you're washing your hands and you're wearing masks, a lot of those things are helping with the flu, just like they would be helping with COVID-19. So I don't have the exact statistic, but I do know that it has been better, or it was better this past year.
Okay. Thank you, Regina. Again, thank you so much for what you do. We really appreciate it. You're one of the unsung heroes, your group, in all of this. Thank you.
Councilmember Steckler, followed by Councilmember Morgan.
Hi, Regina. I've got three vaccination questions for you.
Yeah, I'll do
the best you can. I know. First one, I know that people are having a real problem finding a available vaccine. And I had read that there were programs in place where they're looking to develop web crawlers that people could use to go out and find available vaccines. I was wondering if Snohomish Health had anything like that they were doing to help people ease the burden of finding available vaccine.
I had not heard that. So I don't believe so.
Okay.
That is interesting though.
It would be an easy solution. Okay, so right now it's still hunt and peck and find one that is available and grab the appointment.
It is, and there are a lot of places have waiting lists now. And so I do believe that you can kind of get on a number of different waiting lists if you're looking for kind of the next available place.
Okay. Next question. I don't know if you know the answer to this one or not, but currently we're at the 65 plus vaccination phase. Do you have any idea of the timeline for when the next phase will be opening up?
The rumor that I heard is in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. That's the one I heard too. Just wanted to see. So I must've heard the same rumor. And another question I get asked a lot is, I don't know if you have this information, but you probably know more than I do. Timeline that you foresee in our region to a 70% vaccination level.
So a lot, there are so many variables to get to that place. We need doses. And right now our biggest limitation is number of doses.
Right.
We're not getting nearly the number that we have people who want it. So a lot of that depends on really if we can just get supply in this county. In the last estimate that I heard for at current rates was still several months away.
Okay. Thank you very much. Dan, I echo what Councilmember Cavallari said. Thank you for everything you're doing. Thank you so much.
Councilmember Morgan.
Hi, Regina. Thank you so much for coming out. We really do appreciate it. I had another vaccination question in terms of the providers. Were there any plans on rolling it out to local pharmacies that have capabilities and things of that nature, or is it just specific facilities that you guys are looking at?
Pharmacies are absolutely on the list. As I understand the process, providers have to get authorized by the state to be a distributor. And then once they're authorized, they kind of get onto a list and then they're able to order the vaccine. Pharmacies, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's because they're smaller or what, but they've had a little bit more trouble than kind of your bigger clinics getting that authorization. And like I said, I'm not 100% sure why, but I do know that they're on our radar, and they're definitely something that we were trying to pursue as a completely viable place for these things to be distributed.
All right, great. Thank you for the info. Appreciate it.
Any other questions from the council? Well, thank you, Regina. I know that some of these questions, the answers aren't up to you. They're up to the state or the feds when we get the doses passed on to the state that then passes them on to you. So thank you for all you do to do what we can with what we have so far. So thank you. Looks like we're moving on now on to our agenda to proposed new initiatives. And Council Mayor Pro Tem had something to bring up to discuss with the council this evening.
Stephanie. Thank you, Mayor. What I would like to discuss this evening with the council as a whole is, as you know, for over a year now, I have been discussing that it's really important that we have a legislative agenda so that we know what we want to ask of our representatives. And as part of that, recently, it's kind of became aware to me that it's extremely important that we know ahead of time what we are going to want as a council so that we are prepared and have things in place and prepare and long-term planning in place so that we can be consistently in line asking our representatives for funds every year when they are distributing funds. So what I'm wanting to propose is that we begin to start having a more formal legislative agenda process, and we start to begin to have a better dialogue with our representatives, and we start to do our long-term planning in the process so that we know what we are going to be wanting for the next year that we may be wanting to need funds for. So I'm wanting to recommend that, and we've already, the mayor and I have already initiated that we're going to have our representatives come and talk to us so that we know what's going on in Olympia. And we can actually, it's important that we share with them what projects that we are working on here in the city so that they know what we might need. And I would like to propose that we start to have our long-term planning in place so that every year, like say around October, we have them in and we tell them, this is what we need of you. This is where we want to go. So that we're prepared and ready. And then when it's time for the process, we are able to go and initiate the process to ask for funds for those projects, because it's really important. You know, if we're not in line to get those funds, then somebody else is getting them because they have their bucket of funds. And if we're not asking, then it's going to the other cities. And I think it's extremely important that we start to make sure that we have our plans agreed upon with the consensus from us as a council as a whole of what we want to accomplish and what we want to ask money for from the legislature every year. And so I really just wanted to start to propose that to all of you, that we start to work on that agenda, and it's a process, and that we're going to need to have ducks in a row at certain times of the year in order to move that forward so that we are ready at the right time to get our requests in and ask for those funds for our projects. And I think, you know, right now we have both representatives live in Mill Creek. We need to be asking them to work for us. They're right here. So I just wanted to start to put that out there, that I think it's really important that we have a legislative agenda. We know what we want to accomplish. We know what we're going to want money for in the future, and we are telling them. So that's just kind of where that's at.
Before I get to Councilmember Cavalier, I think part of this would be evaluating whether or not we should consider having our own lobbying presence in Olympia. You know, look at what options might be there out there for us and what those costs might be, so we can evaluate that and make a decision whether to incorporate into any budget amendment at the end of the year some funds if we decide to hire a lobbyist to advocate for us on issues down in Olympia. So part of it would be to see if there's a consensus that we should look at what those options are to consider later in the year. Councilmember Cavalieri.
Thank you, Mayor. Good point. You stole my thunder a little bit, and that's fine. Great minds think alike, I guess. So I would certainly, thanks for bringing this up, Stephanie. This is probably more important now than it has ever been. So I would certainly support it. The idea of having some sort of lobby presence is certainly not only something we should have, but perhaps there's an opportunity to maybe partner with smaller cities in our regions to maybe absorb costs or at least align goals. So I wholeheartedly support this. I think this is probably a long time coming. I think some people or the public is under the perception that maybe council members have all day to drive down to Olympia and whatnot and participate in the process. And most of us have day jobs. So we rely heavily on stuff we hear, indirect communication. So formalizing the process, I think, is essential going forward, especially in these economic times. So I absolutely support it. I appreciate you bringing this up. I think it's a long time coming, and formalizing the process is a great first step. Thank you.
Councilmember Broyles, you had your hand up?
I did, but I think between the three of you, you've actually made every point I considered. So I echo that. Good job. You did it.
We haven't done it yet. We're just getting consensus.
I mean, you all made good points, and I agree with them.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay. The Mayor Pro Tem and I will work with the city manager to begin working on this so we can bring some ideas back to you in the coming months. With that, we will move on to new business. Item F, Arts and Beautification Board appointment. Will Mayor Pro Tem or Councilmember Steckler or Bryles be handling?
I will be taking the lead on this. The Arts and Beautification Committee had an opening come up. One of our members, unfortunately, had to move outside of the city limits. So we needed to replace that position through October of 2022. We put the word out to the local citizens, and we had three wonderful candidates come forward. Today, Mayor Pro Tem Vignal and Council Member Bryles, myself, the chairman of the Arts and Beautification Committee, Guy Amsfield, and Kristen Rasmussen from the city, all interviewed the three candidates. They were absolutely spectacular. All three very different. All three absolutely remarkable. It was incredibly difficult to make a choice. We debated for quite a while. And it was interesting that it was only three, but they were just wonderful citizens. I know I speak for all the other council members and the other people that were involved in this. This was a very hard decision, and we cannot say that enough, because unfortunately we had to choose one, which means we had to not choose two others, and that was something we did not want to do. We wanted to choose all three. Unfortunately, that was just not an option, and we need to make it very clear that the other two that we did not choose were absolutely remarkable and extremely well qualified. It came down to just personalities and fit for the particular committee itself and the people that are on the committee. So we're on behalf of the other council members who, along with me, we'd like to make a motion to appoint Carmen Fisher to the Arts and Beautification Committee. And I would need a second. And then we would need a vote, obviously, Mr. Mayor, from the council.
Yep. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Did anyone abstain? The motion passes. Congratulations, Ms. Fisher. Welcome to the Arts and Beautification Board. Thank you, Mr. Siegel and Ms. Duque, for applying. It's been impressive the last couple of years, the number and quality of candidates we've been getting for all of our boards. So I'm glad to see all the engagement and interest in the community.
And we encourage him to please come back and try another opportunity. Please come back.
Mayor, can I say something just real quick?
Yes,
you may. I do just want to add to everything that Councilmember Steckler said, and that this was a very difficult decision for us. We had really outstanding candidates, and they all interviewed well, and it was a really hard decision for us with them and everyone to know that they appreciated, and that we look forward to seeing them in the future applying for other opportunities.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem. With that, we'll move on to item G, the other item of our new business, the building code update. Michael, are you going to introduce, or are we going to jump right into Director Todd?
We're going to jump right in. Actually, I spoke with Director Todd earlier. We'll just jump straight to Tom Rogers, our planning guru here in the city. Tom, if you could bring us up to speed on the building code update, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can everybody hear me? Everybody can hear? Okay, good. Okay, so I'm Tom Rogers, and I am the planning manager. And so what we have before you tonight for consideration is an ordinance to amend Chapter 1504 of our municipal code, which would adopt the 2018 International Building Codes. The purpose of the codes, as you probably know, is to make sure that the things that are built in the city are safe to the public, and that's the bottom line, is to make sure that things are safe. They are updated every 3 years or so to take into consideration things that have happened in the past, as well as new technologies and other sort of things that come up, and other sort of political initiatives such as environmental, trying to save fuel and things like that. These codes were last updated in 2016 when we adopted the 2015 codes. Usually we do them every 3 years. There's been a delay this time. There was about a year delay anyway, and then COVID hit. What happens is that the codes are prepared on a national level, and then they go to the states, and the state has its own state building code council, and they make recommendations to the legislature. The legislature adopts the plan, and it's signed by the governor. And once those are adopted by the legislature and approved by the governor, every local jurisdiction has to adopt the codes in the entire state. The last time when they were supposed to be adopted was July of last year. And then there was a couple of extensions that were granted because of a lack of opportunities for training the building code officials. And so it got extended to November and then again to February. And there was an extension that was supposed to go to July of this year, but that was just recently revoked by the governor. So actually, they should have been in effect as of February the 1st. And so it's important that we get these adopted as soon as we can. In your packet that's before you, it has the ordinance that we prepared. It was reviewed by our city attorney, Grant. And probably the most important part of that ordinance is Exhibit A, which has both a redlined and a final version of Chapter 1504 in our municipal code. And what you'll find is all we really did was take 2015 and turn it to 2018. And that was a pretty simple switch. It's important to remember that these are all mandatory. We did add another attachment two to your packet, which had we found online a sort of the big differences between the 2015 and 2018 codes, but they're very technical in nature. Our building official that we contract with isn't here tonight, so we're not really prepared to go into the details of that. They're mostly technical. But I did want to go ahead and attach that because I was sure to get a question about, you know, what the differences are. Anyway, what we're recommending, and I'm going to share my screen now, we'd answer any questions that you have. But I would also like to put that up here. Let's see. A second, all this new technology. Okay, so does everybody see that's the proposed motion? Basically, it's just to adopt the ordinance. It would take place or be in effect 5 days after it's published in the paper. And with that, I'd be glad to answer your questions.
Tom, can you unshare the screen? Just for a second.
Okay.
That was a good summary. I just feel compelled to provide a little more background and context. This update, particularly the energy code, has been somewhat controversial with the building community. The last iteration of the building code, the energy code, essentially pushed buildings to net zero, which is fine in and of itself as a policy. This new iteration was more controversial because it has the same goal, but it effectively makes it more expensive to get to the same outcome. We're currently estimating for our business that it's going to cost us $15,000 to $20,000 more per house to comply with the new energy code than under the prior code. And more concerning, and this will get to a question that I'll have for Tom and the city attorney, is part of, you know, some, there's a little bit of social engineering in this. Part of the energy code changes are aimed at moving new construction off of natural gas into all electricity, like we've been seeing in Seattle. The way the energy code is extremely complicated. You have to, for each new house, you have to get a certain number of points, and it gives you a whole variety of options how to reach them. But some of those options end up being worse choices out of a bad set of choices to choose from. One of the concerns, for instance, to get points, you know, under the energy code, it's pushing people to use ductless dryers, which is fine. The problem is, for a builder to use that, they've got to get them, and they're not available. So there's been a lot of issue. That's part of the reason why there's been some delays in implementation. The building community did push for some delays, not because of concern or objections with the overall policy direction, but the practicalities of being able to comply with the requirements. So that is a long way of getting to my question, Tom, is do we have any flexibility and ability to allow builders options, you know, if they're unable to comply with the code because something that is required to be used to achieve points cannot be obtained?
I don't know the answer to that question, to be really honest. I know that every city has to adopt the codes. I know that there's a menu of various items you have to get to those points. It might force you into a different option. I know that they are the minimum. You mentioned Seattle. I know that Seattle is thinking about banning the natural gas and future construction. That's sort of going above and beyond the code. That particular thing is not in these regulations right now.
Well, it's not directly in the regulations, but as a builder, when you go to apply them to design your houses, that's going off of natural gas is the best way, but also an expensive way to get to compliance so you can meet the requirements. And again, this isn't default staff. This isn't anything staff is pushing. Tom is right. This is something we're mandated by the state to do. But I just want everyone to understand, with all the discussion of housing affordability, these mandates that come from the state are adding a significant cost to the cost of housing that's going in our communities. You know, as we're pricing out houses, they're going to have to comply with this. You know, our estimates, like I said, are $15,000 to $20,000 per house.
I think that kind of puts an exclamation point on our need for a lobbyist.
Well, and that, I'll do just a little more background. As an elected official, I am a little bit frustrated. So the background is, this was supposed to take effect last summer, but because of COVID, the governor pushed it off to November. In November, the Building Codes Council, which adopts these, used its authority to extend the deadline till February 1st because of COVID and because of the challenges some builders were looking at from being able to comply with the regulations. The Building Codes Council in January voted surprisingly, and this came as a surprise to the building industry, to continue it till July because some of these issues. The governor vetoed that decision, and which is why it's going into effect February 1st. So there was an effort to move this along, but part of the reason why the governor was able to veto it was because the State Association for Planning Officials submitted an appeal of the Building Codes Council's decision, which gave the governor the ability to then veto the decision. So as an elected official, I was frustrated that the unelected planning officials in the state, their association basically took this upon themselves to appeal it, to give the governor the ability to veto the delay that the Building Codes Council had determined was appropriate. So I just want to provide that context, and I'm getting off my soapbox now. But I thought it's important for the community to understand the cost. I mean, this is something we're mandated to do, but this is to some extent an unfunded mandate that gets passed along to those people purchasing new homes or townhomes or condominiums in our community.
That's good info.
So with that, I'm off my soapbox. If we want to have a motion, we can move on with the agenda. City manager?
Just real quick question. I tried to use that electronic hand, but it's really a question for Grant Degginger. I don't know the Washington law in this area, but I just wanted to challenge the assumption we mandatorily have to adopt this. And I'm just wondering if Grant could talk a little bit about the role of, or the rule really of home rule in Washington state as it interfaces with these building codes. What is the consequence if, for example, council elected or opted not to adopt tonight? What would happen?
So, our building official has to be, when it receives plans, it has to be reviewing it against the current codes. If we don't adopt this, we're going to be out of compliance. I think the thing that maybe makes sense to do is for the council to adopt it And then I think we need to monitor and see if there are some options that become available to local governments so that we can look at making an amendment or amendments if those options become available to us.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Mayor, I'll make the motion that we adopt Ordinance 2021-870, adopting the 2018 International Building Codes.
Councilmember Briles has had his hand raised.
Well, let's get a second on the table, then I was going to call on Councilmember Briles.
Second.
Councilmember Briles, any comments, questions?
Actually, I was just going to ask about the edits that were pointed out here. I just wanted to make sure that I had this right. Under section there, the section title 15-04-150, it looks like we cross out 2015, but don't put anything else in. Whereas everywhere else, we cross out 2015 and put in 2018. Are we missing that? Is that something where we'd have to do this again later?
What was the number? I'm sorry.
15-04-150.
I have the version that I have has the 15 scratched out in a new 2018. Is that not what everybody else has in your packet?
That's what
you're talking about, the energy conservation code?
Yes, yeah. I could just be looking at I downloaded my copy on Friday.
There is a second version that's clean that doesn't have any strikeout or additions, but in my version it does have the strikeout and the addition of 2018.
Right. I did check that as compared with the clean version, then under 15-04-150, it doesn't have 2018 leading International Energy Conservation Code. So that's why
I wasn't correct. Okay, so that I will double check that and make sure the one that gets signed has the correct date on it.
Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Did anyone abstain? Motion carries 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
On to the consent agenda. Item H, approval of checks number 63059 through 63123 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $143,943.38. Audit Committee, Councilmember Cavallari and myself. Any exceptions?
No exceptions.
No exceptions. Item I, payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $260,453.62. Any exceptions?
No exceptions.
No exceptions. Item J, City Council meeting minutes of February 9th, 2021. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Seconded.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Did anyone abstain? The consent agenda is approved. On to reports, the mayor's report. The only thing I have this week is we have more advance notice this time of the next mayor and mayor pro tem virtual town hall. We are scheduling it we moved it off of Wednesday, which we did last time. So we figured people don't want to do it on St. Patrick's Day. So we're going to do it on the off Tuesday in March, on March 16th. So I think a notice already went out in advance at the prior meeting. Before that, we'll ask how many of you intend to participate so we know whether or not we need to notice a potential quorum. So, John?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to attend.
Okay. So that's all I had tonight for my report. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have any report tonight?
Thank you, Mayor. I participated in the Association of Washington Cities two-day event. Lots of great training. They had some really good roundtables, some really interesting conversation on doing a legislative agenda, which is one of the reasons why it was on my mind. And also a really good roundtable on the police bills that are coming up. and how where we're standing on those, as well as some other great information on how the legislature actually works through the budget and things like that. So it was really good information. And also I was at the monthly chamber meeting. And this month we had former county council member Terry Ryan was here. He's now leading the aerospace economic development for the county. And he was letting us know a little bit about where that's standing and had some discussion on the two new companies that he is working on bringing into the county. It sounded quite interesting. So that was a fun chat. And I want to make sure that I am thanking the Public Works Department. I know that they worked tirelessly, all our workers, to get out there and work hard during the snow event to make sure that they were scraping the roads. And I know they worked countless hours. And so I want to make sure that they are recognized for the hard work that they put in during the snow, and that we do appreciate them. Thank you.
Councilmember Bond, any report tonight?
Thank you, Mayor. No report. Congratulations, Carmen. Thank you for stepping up to serve.
Councilmember Steckler, any report tonight?
No report.
Councilmember Cavalieri?
No report, Mayor.
Councilmember Briles?
I'm going to break the trend. Sorry, everybody. I also attended the Association of Washington Cities City Action Days. It was really interesting. What Mayor Pro Tem Vignol had mentioned was interesting. I didn't attend the same round tables. We actually talked about it ahead of time that we would avoid going to the same ones so we could get some different input. I attended the Hot Topic Roundtable on housing. One of the things that really stood out to me, actually several things stood out, but one of those was that the latest COVID relief bill may provide up to $500 million statewide in rent relief for the state, but that there is an estimated $1 billion in rent debt from last year. So that is obviously a big difference. The state doesn't currently have a rent assistance program, which can be scaled up to meet the need. So there are a number of bills related to this issue in the legislature. Regarding housing the homeless via state order, there is wide consensus among the cities of Washington that they don't want the state to dictate homeless siting and at least need to give input to any of that comes through. There are a number of bills also relating to that. And another topic is legislation regarding short-term rentals, things like VRBOs, but then also what constitutes a, and I'm going to put this in quotes because this is how I heard it, and I don't know if this is the official term, but there's business hotels, and then the other one was hotels for poor people. And I don't know exactly how that works out as to the difference there, but that is something that I think we need to understand. All of those are important things from the Association for Washington Cities. I also talking about that legislative priorities list, one of the things I was interested in was that I've seen a resolution in support of a specific bill in another city that had passed that I would be interested in bringing here if that was something that we were, if there's an appetite for that, especially for resolution showing support for specific bills in the legislature. This one that I'm imagining we would look at is House Bill 1156 regarding increasing representation and voter participation in local elections. Short-term, basically ranked choice voting for that we may choose to implement in our city or in any other jurisdictions or that other jurisdictions may choose to implement. And finally, I'm actually really interested to hear from our public works what kind of postmortem we had on the snow plowing, de-icing, sanding over the weekend of the 12th through the 14th of February. How did the equipment and personnel fare? Do we have the right equipment and knowledge? Do we need more equipment or personnel to operate it effectively? How much did we end up using a lot of overtime in order to support that? So thank you.
Councilmember Morgan, any report tonight?
Yeah, just a quick one. I just wanted to let everyone know for all those kiddos eager to get out and about and play again that the Mill Creek Little League is accepting all ages right now. So get out there and play ball.
Thank you. Moving on, item L, financial update. Finance Director, Ms. Gizmo.
Okay, all right. Let me see if I can get
Kimzo, I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, can everyone see my screen?
Nothing up yet. Here we go.
Yep, now we can.
Oh, I think it just switched. Okay. So today I'm just going to go over what has happened over the last 2 years. So we did end up closing out the year, and right now we're just working on verifying fund balances and financial positions specifically for the next audit, mainly because with the federal grants we received, so we're talking the CARES funding specifically, there's gonna be a more extensive audit than previous years. So that was one of my top priorities, and then getting the new budget into our system so that staff and department heads were able to know exactly where they were in their budget. So right now we're just working through updating some procedures and process improvement. We're looking into cost allocation. It is basically going to recoup some general fund costs that are going to enterprise funds for services that departments like IT, HR, finance, the clerk department, that kind of thing. It's not going to be a lot of money. It's probably, it's going to be under $100,000. But as far as taxpayers go, every little bit helps with the general fund. So that's something we're looking into right now. And right now, we're also considering the bank fees that we're paying. I would like to take a look at that and see if we can get some better rates. I'm looking at investment returns because right now we're not really making much, which is normal with COVID. It's expected, but I would like to go and see if we can be getting a better interest rate for our funds. And then lastly, we're just reconciling our system, making sure that all numbers are where we would expect them to be. And so if you have any questions with the information that I'm about to share, you can feel free to call me, email me, and I can make time for any kind of individual appointments if you would like. All right. So this is basically your summary for revenue for every single fund the city has. So I would point out that the general fund, your revenue is up a little bit, and overall, so this far left column was the original budget that was adopted. And then after COVID hit, we did have an amendment. And so we changed projections, and that budget was adopted. So then the far column on the right is going to be the revenue that actually came in. So originally in the general fund, we had projected roughly 29.3 million. And then we dropped that to 28.6. And revenues did end up coming in at roughly 29.9. And then you can just follow that same pattern all the way down. It does look like the REIT fund and the road improvement fund both had revenues come in higher than we were expecting. And then City Hall North had a little bit over, and our drug buy fund. So does anyone have any questions? I will note, we were expecting a total budget originally of $50.8 million over all the funds. We had amended the budget so that we had roughly $54.8 million that we were expecting in revenue, and we came in at roughly $51 million. So these are all down at the bottom. And so we'll go to expenses next. Do you have any questions on any of this information so far?
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a question. Sorry. So these are 2 years. So for example, when you look at the general fund being over, is that because of 2019 performance?
Correct.
So far over. So, you know, when we're looking at this, we have to take into account that maybe 2020 was exactly what we thought it was, but 2019 was so far over.
Correct. So okay. 2019 was a very good year for revenue. 2018, not as much, but as far as the audit goes, they're looking at a biennium, making sure that you're not going over for your budgeted amount. And so that's why I wanted to make sure everyone, I felt like if we were looking at so many columns, no one would get where exactly we were going. So I figured I'd just combine it and we'd show just the biennium.
So the one that really surprises me the most, obviously, is the CIF, the Capital Improvement Fund. Can you kind of explain those numbers for me?
At this point in time, I will have to get back to you on that. I know revenues just weren't as high. I think we had some projects that were put off. And so those were included, you know, in this next biennium for 21-22. And so if those projects weren't done, then the funds wouldn't be transferred because there are rules on how you move the money. So I'm almost certain that that's it, but I'll have to get back with you just to be certain.
Yeah, because we raised it to 6.2, came in at 951, which just doesn't make sense. I'm sure there's a story there. If you could, I'd like to know what that story is.
Yes, and I want to say there might be something to do with a roof, but I'm not 100% certain, so I'll get back with you on that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
All right, so here are the expenses. So this is the more important of the two. Like, while revenue is really important, the main thing is you cannot, the goal is to not go over your budgeted expenses. So we did not have any funds go over, so we're not gonna have any violations in the audit, so that's good. So again, we're starting this far left column is gonna be the original budget. Then we made the amendment, and we dropped from 57.1 million to 56 million in expenses. And then in this far right column, you can see that we actually only spent 47.8 million. So that's impressive. With COVID, I know that we were really pressing to make sure, you know, we were only spending funding that was absolutely necessary. If anyone has any questions, feel free to speak up on this one. And I will note the expenses in the general fund. So this top far right number, this 29,128,197.36, that does not include the COVID funding that we did receive, because otherwise, if I included it, it would just show that the fund went over. But with the auditor's guidance, we did include that in the general fund, but that's not gonna cause any kind of a violation because it was a directive from the auditors. So
I have a couple questions again. That general fund does include the legal fee overrun, correct?
It does include legal fees, yes.
Okay, so that's included in that number.
Yes. All legal fees that hit the general fund are included in there.
Are legal fees anywhere else in this?
We would have random ones, but most of the legal fees are hidden in the general fund. I mean, if there were specific ones that were for other projects, that weren't necessarily related to the general fund. They would be throughout, you know, I'll have to go dig and see where exactly they would be. I'm thinking possibly service water. I'll just have to get back with you on that one.
Okay. And then on the council contingency fund, you've got it down at 500.
Yes.
Maybe I'm wrong, but wasn't there a $2,500 fee that the council voted to support the senior center that I thought came out of this fund, maybe came out of a different fund?
I do believe they said that they were moving. The plan was to move this the spending that hits this fund to another fund in the general fund. But I will also talk to you on that.
Okay. And then the municipal art expense of $39,130. Could I get a breakdown on that? I'd like, I thought we didn't spend the municipal art fund.
Yeah, I can get you, I'll do a screenshot of all the expenses that hit in 2019 and 2020, and I can send that to you.
Thank you. I'd like to see that. Thank you.
Laurel, why does the REIT show up on the expense? Is that reflecting the state portion of the REIT that we remit from what we collect from real estate transactions?
That would be the transfers to the different capital improvement funds that happen every year.
So that's internal transfers?
Correct.
Oh, I know I had another question. This goes back to a question that Benjamin Bryles brought up. Councilman Bryles, there was an equipment purchase. Did we have an equipment purchase was or was not made of the snow removal equipment? Was that made in here or not made?
I am not sure. I don't think so. I know we're talking about one in the future. In this,
but not here. Canadian. Okay.
Yeah.
That was not in the 540,000. Okay.
Not that I'm aware of, but I will double check that and get back with you.
Okay.
John, I think we authorized it last year through a budget amendment, but I'm not sure it actually got purchased yet.
That was a question I had. I know we did it December of 19.
Mayor, I can answer that question. We have, and frankly, it's reflective of the change in leadership and the this dovetails into Councilman Bryles' question earlier about the postmortem. We are preparing to come to council with some important policy making decisions. We want to hear from the council as it relates to emergency preparedness for snow removal and inclement weather. Both Director Todd, myself, and Public Works Supervisor Matthew Combs have looked at what was originally slated for the purchases, and we've got some new ideas as to how to improve the level of service. So we have just been conservative in not making that purchase while formulating recommendations and options for council. And we're also trying to look for some better prices on the equipment. So that's why you still see those funds there that are, although allocated, we've just been really judicious in not spending that money until we're confident what we want to buy. And we check in with council on a couple of policy making questions. So we're hoping to pull that together as quickly as possible and come to council with this more comprehensive conversation.
Thank you, Michael.
All right. So the next slides they're going to be just a pattern of how money moves. So on average, your budget, this is how the orange line is going to be your budget. So that is what we had projected, what we were expecting the money movement to look like based on the budget. And then the blue line is going to be 2019. And then the gray line is going to be 2021. And I will point out that in the general fund, we did have revenue come in and expenses go out for the CARES grant. So that is going to skew the next couple general images here. So overall, the money came in and moved. It came in how we would expect it to. and how we had projected. Okay, and then these are the expenses. You've got your orange is what we had projected based on the budget, and then you have your 2019 in blue and 2020 in gray. So it looks like 2019 expenses were a little bit higher when the year started, and then they dropped below where 2020 ended. So if you follow this blue line, so 19 started higher but then ended under, so that's just something to note. And then the gray line is going to include those, it's just over $1 million in CARES money that went out in the general fund. Okay, here we have the streets. So we have the orange line, that's just gonna be what we were expecting to see based on the budget. And then we have the blue line. So in 2019, we started a little bit lower than we were thinking we were gonna be, and then it increased over time. And it looks like in 2020, we started a little bit higher and then we tapered back down. And I will note that we still, we did not go over any budgeted amounts for expenses. This is revenue though, so that's revenue came in 2020 higher than we had projected. Okay, here are expenses. So Streets did a great job keeping expenses down. You can see that the orange line is what we had budgeted, and then you can see blue is 2019 and gray is 2020. All right, so then we have surface water. And you can kind of see the pattern here where, you know, you're pretty even, and then around April to May, your revenues are coming in. And then, I mean, you can just follow. There's that. Okay, we have expenses. It looks like expenses for 19 and 20 were a bit higher in the beginning of the year than we had projected, and then they came and were below what was projected in the latter part of the year. And they all hit about where we would expect in December. Okay, then we've got the REIT fund. It looks like 19 and 20 income came in a little bit higher. And then in 19, it just continued to climb. And then if you look at the gray line, which is 2020, that came in and was a lot closer to what we had budgeted. And then we have expenses. So this is pretty typical on a fund that does transfers, you know, so your internal transfers, you usually see your expenses, whether you decide to do it quarterly, semi-annually, or just at the end of the year. I mean, it really just depends on your specific fund, but you can see that in 19, there was some money movement, so that's why this blue line is up higher. And then the budget in orange, it didn't look like they were planning on doing any kind of transfers until maybe between July and August, and then again in around December, which is pretty typical for transfers, that you would do them at the end of the year. So I think that's pretty clear on 2020. So this gray line, you know, no activity. And then at the end of the year, you know, you're going and funding all of your different other funds that rely on the monies from this fund. Okay, so then we have the capital improvement fund. And I would say this is, you can see there wasn't a lot of activity. Looks like we had expected some kind of higher activity toward the end of the year. And there was a little bit in 19, but in 20, there was slightly more, but it definitely was not at where we had projected. And so I would say that probably ties back to Steckler's question earlier about why we you know, increase the budget amendment. And then, you know, the amount is lower. This is just reflecting that same pattern. And I'll answer that when I have time to dig into that, and I'll get you that.
Yeah, there must be some logic as to that revenue budget. Why?
And I mean, with COVID, you know, there are a lot of projects that, you know, just couldn't happen. So I'm pretty sure that probably had something to do with it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we have the capital improvement fund expenses. So you've got, we were projecting each year to be higher, and it looks like 19 and 20, we weren't as aggressive with some of the projects. Okay, so then we just have the park CIF. Again, you've got orange is the budgeted annual amount that we were expecting to see. So the monthly, where we thought the money was going to be moving. In 2019, we were below, and in 2020, about half the year we were above and half the year we were below what we had budgeted for revenue. Okay, and then we have expenses. So it looks like about mid-year is where we expected to have some kind of expense. And in 2021, that pattern does look like it happened. It just happened closer to March or April. And then if you look at 19 in blue, that's a pretty steady, they're smaller increments. So, all right, I think this is the last fund. So hopefully everyone's eyes aren't glazing over too much. We've got your orange is your budget. And so it looks like about halfway through the year, we were expecting money to start flowing. And as you can see in the blue, you've got 2019, nothing major, but then it looks like 2020 in gray was October-ish when the funds were spent, or that they came in, I'm sorry. All right, and then lastly, we have the expenses, budget. It looks like we were expecting expenses to flow out toward the end of the year, and in 2019, they did start in January, and it was above what we were expecting. Same thing in 20, but just not at the same scale as in 2019. All right. Does anyone have any other questions that I can either look up or possibly answer right now?
Any other questions? Councilmember Morgan.
Earlier you mentioned different investment opportunities for the city's funds that we have that we're not using. Are there limitations to the different investment vehicles the city's allowed to investigate?
Yes, the state does have requirements on what you can and can't invest in. So you have to be very careful on where you're putting your money.
All right. Do you know specifically, is it just FDIC insured or annuities or things of guaranteed assets?
I know there's a standard on the investments. Like they can't, like if you're investing in bonds, they can't be below a certain grade. The safety piece of that, so that you're not risking public funds.
Right.
I would have to dig into that to get more specific.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Mayor. I would just like to ask, could we please have the spreadsheets sent over to us so we can look at them more in depthly? I didn't see them in the packet, so that we can research them. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay.
No question, but I did want to thank you, Laura. I think it's your first big presentation to us. So nice job. That was a lot of information to go over, and it's been a very difficult time. So thank you. I like the flow charts too. That kind of shows a lot of those questions and goofy numbers that I was asking about. And I recall how we had to hold on a lot of funds and projects and such. So that did start to explain a lot of things. So nice job for the first one out. Thank you. Glad to have you on the team.
Thank you. turn over to the city manager for his report and staff reports.
Thank you, Mayor. Before I begin providing my report, I do want to turn the floor back over to our finance director. We had a couple of grant opportunities that we wanted to discuss with council. Very short deadlines. Laurel just discovered these last week. I explained to her the recent history and the consensus that we do not apply for grants unless we come to council. So I would like to turn the floor over to Laurel to present these grant opportunities, and we really wanted to hear from council on it. I think we have opportunities here, but we want to get a consensus and then we can begin the work, but we've got some tight deadlines. So Laurel, if you would continue and talk about those two grants, I appreciate it.
So we have two different grant opportunities. Both of them are through the Department of Justice. They are currently on the Washington State Department of Commerce website. I did submit a letter of intent last Friday just because they wouldn't accept any kind of application if I did not, and that was the deadline. So we're looking at roughly 15 different grants that will be handed out. 14 of those will be for $250,000, and then there'll be one that'll be just under $100,000 between the two grants that are available. So at this point in time, there are already 179 applicants, and I just wanted to make sure that was something you guys were okay with me applying for. The funding will be through December 31st of 2023. So the period that we would be applying for would be starting March 16th of 2021. And one of the grants, so they're both CESFs, they're Coronavirus Emergency Supplemental Funds. They, one of them is specifically for any kind of COVID revenue loss and any kind of expenses for public awareness, really housing support. So I know someone had mentioned the rental assistance. So that is something that would qualify, rental assistance, security deposits, just different costs to keep people in their homes. There are all kinds of things that qualify, but the main thing is just, it's $250,000. The technological response would qualify. So if we wanted to outfit the council chamber, that was something we could do and it would qualify. The other one is more focused on extending services to marginalized communities. So I think both of them have potential, and I would like to start working on those.
What I would add with regard to the marginalized communities, Director Todd, myself, and our finance director talked about it. There's a belief that maybe we don't have marginalized communities, but we do have a very diverse population that comes to City Hall, or at least used to come to City Hall for passport services. And what I've heard is a level of creativity and energy to invest in the time of applying for these grants. We do believe they're very competitive, but we think that the return justifies the effort. And so what we would ask council for is approval to apply for both of these grants, just to see what the outcome is. And then we would then come back to council to obtain permission to formally accept the grant if we're so awarded.
Is there any good reason not to apply? Can anyone think of a good reason not to?
Other than staff capacity, no, Mayor.
Do you have the capacity?
Yeah, we believe that the value of these grants is sufficient. That that's a loaded question. We will make the capacity because it's potentially very beneficial to us if we can ring the bell on both of these. So.
Hey, if I can just add the $1.9 trillion stimulus they're proposing, we may want to certainly keep on our toes, because I'm sure there's going to be some more cash for the city. So there'll probably be a lot more opportunities. So if we have projects that have been maybe lamenting a little bit, or or we've put off, or things that we wanted to purchase, whether it's vehicles or buildings or whatever, we might have that opportunity with some of these newer funds. So let's keep our ear to the ground.
And so what I neglected to do, a point made, Councilman Cavallari, what I neglected to do is get a screenshot for the motion to be made. But we'd request council support by motion to apply for both of these grants that our finance director has outlined. Laurel, can you give us the names of those two grants again, please?
It's the Coronavirus Emergency Supplemental Fund. One is the By and For Organizations, and the other one is the Local Government, Tribes, and Nonprofit Organizations Competitive Application. It's a mouthful, I'm sorry.
How about so moved?
Second.
I trust our city clerk can appropriately document the motion. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Did anyone abstain? The motion carries 7-0.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate your support. Moving on, we really want to thank the council. We thought it was a very helpful discussion that we had on the Dobson Rumlard Cook Church property on the February 9th council meeting that enabled us to identify our consensus parameters for beginning the process to determine the future of these properties. As we all know from our discussion, we're at the beginning of a very long process with these properties, and there's a lot more information to be gathered. We also discussed at the meeting our desire to engage our community at every step along the way. And to that end, the internal administrative team, we are planning to meet with a communications consultant tomorrow, with the goal being to bring someone on quickly to assist us with getting some initial input from our community, from our residents, our business owners, the administrative teams, and other stakeholders to form a short online survey. The hope is that to get the online survey up before the middle of March. We'll be publicizing and promoting it. It'll be a campaign style a PR effort. The survey will be similar to our discussions that we had at the council meetings previous up to this point, seeking very early general input, and I emphasize general input, on what is important to people. We really want to avoid very specific uses being asked in the survey, but the firm is going to help us in developing a community response that mirrors the process that we've engaged in here at City Hall in our council meetings. The firm that we're talking to is identified as Lund Faucet, L-U-N-D-F-A-U-C-E-T-T. The principal is Vanessa Lund. The firm's members include Vanessa and her partner, Chris Fawcett, who have been working on public-facing community outreach and research issues for the last couple of decades here in Washington. Our consultant, Karen Reed, speaks highly of them, and we'll be very interested to hear what they have to say tomorrow. The other that I foreshadow just quickly this evening, and then we're going to be telling you more about it on March 3rd, and switching gears, is really Director Mike Todd's efforts to build relationships wherever we can to try and do things in a more efficient manner. He's working currently with AWC with the GIS Consortium. The GIS is a technology that would enable any of us with the handheld device to go to any property and call up data related to infrastructure, both above and below ground, and other critical engineering data that's necessary in order for us to work more efficiently and effectively in modern standards. We are behind in that regard, and Director Todd has an ambitious plan that I think is cost effective in working with this consortium. And so we're gonna have that information for you. As I mentioned, we're planning for the March 3rd meeting, depending on how all goes well with our diligence in that regard. Moving on next to community relationship building, and it's really a follow-up on the new initiative that council supported, Councilman Bryles' initiative relating to working with our service organizations.
As a result of the meetings we've had and follow-up, the City of Mill Creek is planning to organize a community service day event on Saturday. We're planning for April 24th from 10 a.m. to noon. We're going to be reaching out to all of our community partners, including the local public service organizations and others, to help come up with project ideas for the event. This event would be open to all organizations, along with individuals and families in our community. The projects will be outside on trails, in parks, and are on sidewalks. We are slating this for the first type of project so that we're able to follow COVID protocols and really manage some of the logistics that can become unwieldy if we had indoor related activities. We're gonna be allowing for social distancing with a maximum number of 15 people from outside your household, limiting your two households working together on particular projects. We're gonna have all the other COVID requirements such as masks, Clorox wipes, rubber gloves, and we're working through the logistics. So that's something that we wanted to foreshadow for you going forward. Finally, real quick update. We have been working to make city council chambers available for the members of council that want to participate. We continue to experience reverberation with our cheaper, less expensive alternative. There is room, we believe, for the next council meeting for at least one, maybe two members of council to participate in chambers. We're going to be doing some additional reverberation surveys this week using our administrative teams to occupy the council chairs just to see what other reverb metrics Joe needs in order to then come back to council with some more specific proposals. But we are not yet ready to open up for public participation in council meetings, but we did want to at least throttle forward with the potential for members of council. So if any members of council are interested in actually an in-person participation, depending on what your views, your risk tolerance, and your desire, perhaps you've already been immunized, we want to let all of council know that we hear you. And we want to be able to capture the broad spectrum of desire and various risk tolerances to begin to reoccupy City Hall. We miss you. And while we know this may seem premature, we also believe that we can at least from a technical standpoint, at least tolerate one, maybe two members of council. If there are any technical questions regarding that, I added Joe Sokolowski, our IT manager, on not necessarily to present something in addition to what I just said, but to answer any potential questions that you have that is just simply not in my technical wheelhouse to respond to. And if there are no questions, I would then conclude my report for this evening. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Michael. Any questions? Moving right along, I see they included in the packet is some minutes from the Parks Board meeting and the Arts and Beautification Board as well for everyone's review. Moving on to audience communication. Would anyone like to close out the meeting speaking to the council? Please either unmute or put up your yellow hand. I see Barb, you are first up this evening. Name and address and you know the drill.
Barb Heidel, 1401 144th Place Southeast. First, thank you, Mayor. I'd like to thank Matthew Combs and his team in regard to trying to handle the snow removal. Even though I didn't drive during that time, I did walk out to Mill Creek Boulevard and walk down towards Town Center. When I first started walking down, I started walking Saturday in the snow just to see how we were doing. And I could tell the road was plowed, but it already snowed on top of the plowed area. When I walked on Sunday, I think it was Sunday, I was surprised to see how poor 153rd was, because that's a main road for the fire department to get in and out of. So I was really surprised on the condition. By Monday, Mill Creek Boulevard was great. It was really good. Still not ready for me to drive, because I couldn't get out of my neighborhood and I won't drive on snow and ice. But the difference was good. I'm hoping that someday we'll have the ability to get to make a sweep through the neighborhoods to at least make it easier for those of us who do not have four-wheel drive or all-wheel drive, whatever it's called, to get out of the neighborhoods without slipping and sliding all over the place. If this is going to become a yearly issue, then I think it's something you might want to look into and maybe get another. I know there was talk about another plow, so we might need to think about it to help in the neighborhoods instead of just clearing Seattle Hill Road. Though I did notice Main Street had been plowed pretty good. But to get a little bit more into a neighborhood than just Mill Creek Boulevard and I don't know where else because I didn't walk that far. Thank you.
Thank you, Barb. Would anyone else like to speak to the council? Hearing none, we are now going to move into an executive session to discuss potential litigation pursuant to RCW 42.30.110 subsection J, three little I's. No action will be taken, correct, Grant and Michael?
That is correct, Mayor.
No action will be taken. How much time do you need?
Let's shoot for 20 minutes, please.
So we will, it's seven, if my dogs will stop barking. They're excited for us to go into executive session. 7:33, so we will go 22 minutes to give ourselves a little break before we get started. So by my math, that puts us to 7:55. Is that correct?
That's correct. Not
a wrong suit. I'll look into the finance director to verify my numbers. We'll be in executive session till 7:55.
Thank you.
Thank you. Meeting.
Boom, shakalaka.
You're back.
Right on time.
Yeah, it was shutting down on me.
To the second.
It said it's going to close down on you.
We're back. We concluded our executive session at 7:55, and moments later at 7:55, we're adjourning the regular meeting. We'll see you all next week.
Good night, everyone.
Take care, everyone.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.